got, there's brand recognition, right? Someone goes bing bong, you know that's a doorbell because that's a classic doorbell noise. You can create that kind of feel of something being upmarket and artisan and all the rest of it with the packaging colours you choose and who's that going to appeal to, you know? If I see a rustic looking package, I'll be like, ooh. I think that's a thing a lot of people underestimate in all of branding. It's time.
Hello and welcome to Well, You're the Designer, a podcast about what it's like to be a professional graphic designer, what's needed to build a career, how cultural movements feed through to everyday design, and also crisps. That's right, because the title of today's episode is Brand Recognition and Crisp Disruption. My name is Danny Powell, marketer, mediator, moderator, and monster muncher. And I'm here to guide our discussion and try to make sure we get some valuable insights from what may well descend into a big, long chat about crisps. On today's panel, we have Oscar Jackson, fresh out of the packet, but gathering experience like a nacho gathers dip. Oscar has been with us over 3 years, and as well as designing visual marketing materials for Solar Press, he also works with Solar Press's sponsees like Southend United to create displays and printed materials. Bringing some classic flavour, we have Richard Kemp, a little saltier, but somehow rather comforting. Richard is an experienced designer with many years and many satisfied clients and briefs behind him. So what I'd quite like to do, because this is about crisps and brand recognition and colour and things like that, I want to start with a crisp-based quiz.
Cool.
So all the questions are, what colour is...
Do we buzz or get a point?
I think you can come to a consensus, maybe, unless you want to compete.
Do you want to compete?
I'll compete, yeah.
I mean, like a buzzing sound. I'm going to...
Oh, all right then.
Oh, what sound?
Oh, okay. I'll just... Hand up.
My buzzer sound is going to be a brief pause.
Okay.
So you're always buzzing.
I think it might... I don't know. Anyway, I'll ask some questions and see what happens.
Yeah, okay, go for
it. So, what colour are Smith's salt and vinegar?
I don't even know what they are.
Oh, Smith's salt and vinegar.
Light blue.
No, they're blue. Blue and red and white. Red, white and blue.
I'm just going for a sort of main colour.
Sky blue.
I've written down blue. I think they're more of a sort of a
navy blue, aren't they?
What are Smiths? Are they the ones that come with the salt pack in it and you have to...
That's Smith's Salt and Shake, but they did have a range of flavours.
Oh, close.
When I was Googling this as well, I kept sort of coming across... I will get on with the quiz in a minute. I kept coming across like Google images to see what colour they were, and you come up with the Australian ones that are all different and things like that. So I did try and make sure.
There's no internet. It's not like a semaphore. There's no international crisp flavour colour code.
No, it's like the Wild West.
Don't they have like slightly different flavours as well, like cheese and chive instead of cheese and onion?
Oh yeah, I think
they can dress it up, but we all know a chive is just a onion. Really skinny onion.
Mm. In Scandinavia, it's all paprika in it.
Is it?
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, Poland as well, a lot of paprika and stuff.
Yeah, Hungary's known for its paprika. Paprika chat. Well, you're the designer. Right, this is going to take ages, this quiz.
Right, go on.
So Smith's salt and vinegar were blue. Smith's cheese and onion.
Green.
Yeah. Walker's cheese and onion.
Blue,
yeah, they are blue.
Walker's salt and vinegar.
Green.
Pickled onion monster munch.
Purple.
Well done. I thought that might be a curveball, but they are indeed purple.
Beef is yellow, right? Roasted beef is yellow.
Yeah. I love my crisps.
Pringles, sour cream and onion.
Green.
Green?
Green. Yeah.
Kettle chips, mature cheddar and red onion.
Oh. It's probably like black or something, right?
Yeah.
With gold on it and picture of a dude with a top hat.
Orangey yellow.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Piper's Anglesey Sea Salt.
Oh, cream. White, blue and gold.
Cream.
Blue.
Oh.
Straight up blue. Kettle chips, lightly salted.
I don't know my kettle.
Blue, white. Blue, mostly white.
Can I just think, can we keep it to one colour? I've just put one.
But they don't just have one colour.
But they've
on
got
the
a majority colour.
Oh, okay, white.
Yeah, they are white.
Thank you. But they also have... like a light blue and I think a bit of gold on there.
Maybe, yeah.
Probably they do.
And black.
I don't know why I found that surprising because salt's white, but there you go.
Yeah, no, there you go. Black.
Blue.
White. They're the like hipster crisp at the minute, aren't they?
I haven't heard of them.
Torres. Oh no, they're like your sort of East London.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, they're about £4 a bloody packet for a Torres black truffle.
Oh, I had a packet of crisps today. I know this is really meandering now. I think they're the little triangle shape and they're called poppers or something, right?
Hey.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. But it's what they're called.
Yeah.
And it was just like your regular snack pack.
Mm.
Five crisps in it.
I heard
like,
you complaining.
Like, seriously, man, five. There crisps. Was just five in there.
Are they like sort of
I
like,
was so outraged, I sent a picture of it to my daughter.
Are they like rice cake sort of crisps?
No, imagine a cross between a Dorito for size and shape, but the kind of like texture and in the mouth feeling of a poppadom.
Right.
They're good, but I want more than five.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is disappointing.
Yeah, it's very disappointing. Yeah,
that's ridiculous.
Just why I want the crisps, I also like the concept of the grab bag that they have now. Do you remember when you couldn't grab crisps in a bag? But now you can.
Yeah, now you can.
Yeah.
Tyrrell's sea salt and cracked black pepper.
Black.
Black indeed, yeah.
Nice one.
My mum has them.
Smith's scampi fries.
Green.
Green, yeah. With a substantial, significant amount of yellow. There is a significant yellow box, but they are a green
background.
On a green field.
Yeah.
Salt and vinegar chipsticks.
Blue and white, stripy.
Yeah, I got down blue, but yeah. So what's interesting about these is that you've got certain relationships between the colour and the flavour represented, and some where it goes completely out the window.
Yes.
I've never had a purple pickled onion.
No.
Or yellow beef. But then you don't get many blue foods, do you? But there's loads of blue packets.
It's true.
Yeah.
That is true.
I guess there's only so many nice bright colours that look good on a shelf, though, aren't there?
Yeah.
So who decides that cheese and onion is blue?
Walker's.
Gary Lineker.
No, because this is the thing, right? If we're going to talk about Chris Disruption up front.
Yeah.
Then I'm obviously of a certain vintage, so I remember essentially a pre-Walkers, because Walkers, in similar ways, are like Apple, right? Whereas back in the day, they had a very, very small percentage of the crisp market. It was all KP and Smith's growing up in the late 70s, early 80s. That's what it was about. So salt and vinegar was... Oh, now I can't remember which way round is it. What are Walkers now? What's salt and vinegar now?
Green.
For? Blue.
Green.
No.
Salt and vinegar's green.
Salt and vinegar's green, right? So, yes, so back in the day, cheese and onion was green, salt and vinegar was blue, across the board, no exceptions.
Yeah.
And then Walker's done an apple and went, actually, we're a bit cooler than that.
Mm.
And then now it seems they've actually convinced everyone that it's this way round, with salt and vinegar being green and cheese and onion being blue. So I think Walker's cracked open the Pandora's box. Mm. And then once that happened, all the other designers, I mean, I guess it's packaging designers, right? It's marketing and packaging designers that will come to these decisions and gone, well, actually, turns out we can do whatever we want.
Mm. But, I mean, if Pandora's box was open, then certainly when Pringles came along, they weren't paying attention because they've gone sour cream and onion, which is your cheese and onion.
Cheese and onion.
Say. So they've gone green with that and they've gone blue with their salt and vinegar. So they're
trad.
Smith's convention.
McCoy's also do blue for salt.
But ready salted is always red.
Yeah.
Unless you are kettle chips when they're
but
white.
But I reckon them kettle and stuff, they go different because they're more...
They're fancier, aren't they?
Fancier. Yeah, yeah. So they're allowed to be different, I think. They're trying to break out.
They're trying to forge more of a link between their flavours and ingredients and provenance. And so they want some kind of relationship.
The fancier
like
the
salt
food,
is white.
The more words it takes to tell you what it is, right?
Yeah. Like hand-cooked crisp. Like, ow.
Yeah.
I'm happy.
Yeah. Yeah, no one has to suffer for crisps.
Yeah.
And also, you can cook anything with a hand. That's why we invented ovens, right?
Yeah. Pan-fried. My God. What else are you going to fry? Well... I suppose it's deep frying, isn't it? But pan-fried. Fried. Pan-fried egg.
Fried egg.
It's fried, yeah.
Yeah, but I think that is a marketing thing, right? Mm. To try and bring it round to something remotely towards design is that you can create that kind of feel of something being upmarket and artisan and all the rest of it with the packaging colours you choose and who's that going to appeal to. You know, if I see a rustic looking package, I'll be like, ooh, I'll probably be more into that. Although I do like my kind of like cheap and cheerful stuff as well. But I think that's what it is. And then you can, like you say, add all these descriptors and I generally go with the more words there are on the front of the packet to describe that sausage or crisp, the more fancy it is.
Yeah. But it's interesting how these conventions arise. I mean, Ready Salted Red, that's one that, you know, bears no relation to the world, really.
No.
I guess it's just the primary colour that was left once you'd established, you know, that maybe
I don't know,
salt because comes from the blue sea and that onions could sometimes appear a bit green.
Yeah, maybe, but like salt would have, really salty would have been the first crisp, right?
Yeah. Because
so they had salt. So when you're inventing your really salted packaging, you probably got the pick of the bunch.
Yeah, but they probably wouldn't have been red back then, would they? They'd have just been.
No, it's would have been brown all, paper.
All that crisps
were, wrapped up in newspaper, wouldn't they? You'd have to buy them from a kindly gentleman who would reach behind the counter and have a jar of crisps and he'd pull you out. Half a pound, all right. Yes, please, mister. And they take that home. Yeah, that's probably how it was.
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about, right? Danny, please.
Kind of, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. Because before variation, there's no need to differentiate.
Yeah.
No variation, no differentiation.
Yeah, because it's just crisps.
So we've got these instances where, like, especially if you're trying to sell something of some value that you want to sort of promote your ingredients and make some suggestion there with colour.
Yeah.
But with your ready salted being red, no real link. I also made a note for myself about slush puppies here. Blue raspberry.
Yeah.
And a few things have become blue raspberry, and it's just a convention sort of arises, and then
because it's a shortcut, it right? So like whenever like any kind of graphic design or commercial design, it's about communication. So you've got a ready-made shortcut, so that's something you haven't got to now think about or do extra work. Do you know what I mean? So if everyone, you know, like red is for danger, so you know, traffic lights, stop signs, warning signs, alarm light, flashing lights and all that sort of thing. So you can use that, can't you, if you're like doing a packet for, I don't know, say you want a new kind of crisp and they're so spicy that they're dangerous. So you can use those conventions, right? You can put some skull and crossbones on there like a thing, and you like some like really like bright reds and you know, distress text and all that sort of stuff. I guess a bit like those sweets, you know, like all the really super sour ones. That's what they go for. They align them like graphically and visually, they kind of align with themselves with like explosives and TNT and all that sort of stuff. So I guess that's the idea, right? It's about a communication shortcut, because that's already there. People already have those associations.
Yeah, it's just evoke that idea without words or
so. You know, if you've got a black packet of crisps with, you know, a couple of like accent colors on there that maybe are more about the flavor, then you go like, that must be a fancier packet of crisps than, so when you look at all the value brands like from the supermarkets, they're all pretty white. So like the Tesco stuff, the Morrison stuff, the Sainsbury's stuff. And they, so that a lot of white, because, you know, they're just like, that's what it is.
Yeah.
It's just like the basics. And then they all start kind of emulating each other, don't they? So what's the Sainsbury's thing? Would have it in the, like the handwritten font. What's it called? Taste the difference. Is that Sainsbury's? It's one of them, right? So they started doing their super range where they would use darker, more like kind of heritage and like regal colours, like luxurious colours, a little bit of a script font, more words describing what the food is.
Yeah.
And then all the other supermarkets start going like, oh, okay, we're going to have ours. And then they're going to, you know, they're going to also have their script font or like handwritten kind of calligraphy thing. And, and it's called something that's nearly similar. I mean, the king of that, I think, is like Lidl and Aldi, you know, when you see their kind of off-brand brands, like, you know exactly what that's supposed to be.
Oh, yeah.
Like, there's absolutely no doubt that that's their, you know, like Cross and Blackwell, and that's their
Oreo.
Kellogg's, and that's their Oreo, right? Because, and it's kind of when you get that people who, like, say, work in video production or something, and you need a song or you want a piece of music, but you can't afford the... So you get hold of a musician and go, I need it to sound like that, but not to the point of it being a legal problem.
Yeah.
And then they can, because people who understand music properly, they can go, oh, yeah, so this is created by this progression and using like these different harmonies, right? So they can create something similar, so you get the same feeling and you know exactly what it's supposed to be, but legally it's fine. So I always love looking at, like, going to Aldi and Lidl and like seeing all the things and going like, yeah, like they've absolutely nailed that, because you know exactly what it is, but it's different enough that no one's going to get in trouble, I guess.
Yeah, but they all have that hierarchy of your basics range of, like you say, whites and maybe a bit of the
Be like,
overall logo branding.
Like, like a primary colour, some of their basic, you know, branding and stuff, yeah.
And then up through colourful and then into blacks and golds and luxury muesli.
And then you call it granola instead, don't you? I mean, it's probably a different thing, but to me, it's just muesli with a top hat on.
Now, before I move on from Schlush Puppies, did you know they had a mermaid flavour? Which is a sort of aquamarine colour, which is nice.
Why would you want something that tastes half human and half fish?
I don't know. Yeah.
What flavour would that be?
It would be, you know, drink. get a fish, bite one of your fingers.
That's a fish finger.
Mermaid flavour.
Yeah.
That is so
true. I don't know if it's a limited edition or whatever, but like, certainly my...
Well, it must be quite limited. Probably not that many mermaids about, right?
No, it's, yeah, it's tough to get hold of.
I wonder if you can buy mermaid-friendly tuna.
Yeah. Unicorn-free Finder's lasagna.
Yeah.
So we get these arbitrary relationships between colours and brands. And it got me thinking about, like, political parties. Like, we're used to red meaning left and blue meaning right. And it's just completely the opposite in America, isn't it?
Yeah.
So the Republicans are red.
Yeah.
The Democrats are blue. I always have to make that mental switch when they talk about red states and blue states. I'm like, no, it's the other way
around. Yeah, it's the other way around.
It does make you think, like...
Although, weirdly enough, it actually used to be the other way around politically, didn't it? Because the Democrats used to be really right-wing and it was the Republicans that were on the left.
The political spectrum has a colour spectrum.
Yeah.
I mean, think about the UK... red, left, blue on the right, and the Dem are quite established. I think they changed shades a couple of times, but always in the sort of yellow and orange area. And then it's up to other political parties, and it's up to other political parties to find their brand, isn't it? With what's left, green
party,
green sells itself,
yeah.
But then we have had other marginal parties come along, haven't we?
Yeah, I guess like there was UKIP for a while. Purple, and what was that? Purple, yellow?
They're purple and yellow, I think, are they?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Funny thing is, because like you guys done a, for the, you know, for election to market our like election printing and stuff.
Yeah.
You had to make up your own.
Fake brand, yeah.
And yeah, fake party,
Went with pink, because it's quite a new, nice, friendly, neutral colour.
Yeah.
No other party has that colour, so we didn't want to pick a side. We were just being unbiased. Just,
Yeah, obviously got to be neutral.
It's a loving colour, isn't it, pink?
Yeah, no.
I think actually just after we did that, there was a pink party sort of emerged. I think there was Sandy Toksvig had some sort of feminist kind of party that sort of emerged just as soon as after we did that. So yeah, it's hard to find one. And I think, is it UK Reform, which is sort of used to be the Brexit party, used to be UK?
Yeah, now that they're is
kind of
that
look pale blue now, or sort of a,
it's like got a pale blue and a like a dark blue. Yeah, they're kind of like an uppercase conservative party. Because I did have to do a leaflet, put a leaflet together for one of their candidates.
Mm.
And, you know, like the kind of visual guide I got, it was all kind of same colours as the Conservative Party, but it had a lot of, like, you know, bold and heavyweight fonts, a lot of all caps and stuff like that. Yeah.
So, well, talking about brand recognition as well, and we spent a lot of time talking about colour, but I guess colour, is that your biggest weapon for brand recognition, if you've got a colour that's different from your...
Not always.
Competition.
I guess it depends, right? I guess if you're like Coca-Cola or something, then that red is like really important.
I'd say it's more for food and drink than it is for anything else.
Yeah.
I think apple, that's like, do they have a colour? Grey, black, white, do they have a colour?
Yeah, and have like the rainbow logo do as like well, don't they?
Mobiles, I don't know, it's just like, yeah. Shoe Nike doesn't have a colour, does it? Red boxes, they come in, but would you associate red
yeah,
with
I guess
Nike?
They've got so many... They've expanded, you know.
Yeah. Adidas, like, I think green, nice. Maybe, but I wouldn't say you associate colours with most things. Just, I'd say mostly food.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, food and even drink. Coke has, because it has sub-brands, you then have to sort of start looking around the Pantone book, don't you?
Well, they just use essentially grey, silver and black, don't they, for their sub stuff? And then they've got, like a cherry red.
Yeah.
And then they just use the...
Vanilla.
The red on
green?
The...
Is there a green?
Is there a green one?
Yeah, they had not a can, but they had like a green version, I think.
Yeah.
Right.
And they had vanilla at one point, which was like a cream.
Yeah.
And they have lemon, don't they? Is that one? Am I thinking weird?
I think so, yeah.
I don't know, but yeah. They've...
But the ones you see like all ones, over the shop are
red.
Essentially red, grey, black, with the red on.
We spoke about the Easy companies in other episodes. EasyJet, Easy.
Oh, okay, yeah, with the orange
company, isn't it?
Yeah. Orange and Cooper Black.
Cooper Black. Yeah, yeah, we were talking about that when we spoke about typefaces. But yeah, I mean, they've took a colour and run with it, haven't they? I mean,
yeah.
It'd be difficult for another airline to come along.
Well, I guess like now. Virgin Red.
Yeah.
Got their red, haven't they?
Anytime I see an orange plane, I just associate. I saw an orange plane the other day. I was like, oh, it's an EasyJet plane. One of my little flight radar, because I don't know, I have a fascination with like seeing planes, and it wasn't an EasyJet plane. I was fairly shocked. So yeah, I think colour does have a big part, but I think also depends on the product you're selling.
Yeah, and I guess like the tone of voice as well. So obviously, like people, you know, it's like someone's gait, right? You can recognise someone by their gait, can't you?
Yeah.
So I think that's almost like kind of a bit like what a brand is. It's, you know, or recognition. It's just like if you know someone well enough and you know their gait, you can see a silhouette or of them walking or something. You can go, that is 100% that person.
Mm.
So I think, yeah, you need a recognisable gait, right?
Yeah. I guess M&S have got a very specific tone of voice, don't they?
Yeah.
And I think they pay Dawn French a lot of money to say their words for them, and it's a very specific flavour to it. Yeah.
You probably could, couldn't you? You probably could hear someone say, especially like their famous like food adverts and stuff.
There's probably more recognition than colour in that case.
Yeah.
What are they? Sort of deep green?
A green, light green, and a deep green. I thought it was a bit of both. Am I wrong?
I'm not sure, actually. It's green
and white.
It's like
isn't
a fairly light white sans serif, isn't it?
The M's white and the S is white, I thought, and then the whatever it's called,
ampersand,
was green. I thought that's what it was.
Oh, okay.
Maybe I'm mistaken it.
Yeah. I think they
express it in a few ways. I think that's definitely one of them.
So I think the thing you need, though, for brand recognition is... Like, you need, like, a good, solid, consistent brand, but you need time. I think that's a thing a lot of people underestimate in all of branding.
Mm.
it's time. So time for people to kind of, so one of the best ways I've heard it described, I guess, is like, you know, like your logo is a vessel and it's up to the public or your customers to then fill that vessel with meaning right. over time. So if you look at the National Geographic logo, it's like a yellow rectangle, which isn't remarkable in any way, right? But if you're, you know, from a certain demographic or a certain age, that'll resonate with you, that yellow rectangle. It will mean something to you because of the meaning you've attached to it. Maybe you're like an avid subscriber, maybe, you know, someone in your family is an avid subscriber and it brings back memories of kind of, you know, going around your granddad's or nan's house or something and they've got their national, yeah, do you know what I mean though? Yeah. So that's, it's time is another thing as well. That's what really helps with brand recognition. You know, obviously you can do it quickly if you've got the money and you can just do it through exposure and just like absolutely plaster it everywhere. But I guess that's kind of harder now, right? Because I suppose now TV's so kind of fragmented, whereas it used to be everyone would watch programs when they were on, especially in this country, there was, what, 4 or 5 channels.
Mm-hmm.
So advertising then, I think, was like a lot better, right? There was like all those, but there was like the classic campaigns, right?
Yeah.
So like the Hamlet cigar.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember that with the dude? Yeah.
Yeah.
And then Air on a G String, is that right? Is that what it's called?
I think it might be.
Like the bass line and stuff. And that would come in, Hofmeister, Follow the Bear, right? But all those things. And again, it was time, wasn't it?
Mm.
And when they started selling, what was it? When they started selling shares in British Gas and they had the whole, if you see, see,
tell him. I remember that, yeah.
Yeah.
But at that time, because that was the premium way in which these brands would be able to reach out and talk to their customers.
Like a captive
audience.
Where
the budget goes. That's, and led to a lot more, I suppose, talented people involved there, money spent on it.
Yeah, whereas, I feel like a lot of ads get lost in the sea of marketing now. Look, like the sea of ads.
Mm.
Like, there's not one that stands out to me as of recently.
And also mostly because now you're just really, you're looking in that bottom right-hand corner waiting for the skip to come up.
Yeah, you don't really watch TV's dying, isn't it?
Yeah, like traditional broadcast TV. Yeah, definitely, definitely. So most ads, you know, like pop-ups, aren't they really? Or on videos, they're like way more interfering, aren't they, than they used to be?
Yeah.
Intrusive.
Intrusive, yeah, that's the one.
On Netflix, you have to pay now on Netflix now to not get ads, right?
I think that was Prime, isn't it?
Amazon Prime? Yeah. Oh, Prime.
It better not be happening to Netflix. So.
Oh, they'll probably go there.
Yeah, but I know Prime is, yeah. You have to pay an extra subscription so you don't get ads. They're just bringing what kills.
But talking
TV.
About brand recognition, Netflix, when you hit a ba-boom.
Yeah. And that,
you know,
end with a line.
And that doorbell. It's just like, oh. Because, you know, there's people live down out, you know. And the thing is, this is what I find is right. So about those doorbells. Normally, doorbells back in the day, the speaker's on the inside of the house and only the inside of the house.
Mm.
And you press the thing and it goes like, ring, bong, and you can hear it inside. Whereas now, so when the people next door have people around and they press their doorbell, there's a speaker outside as well. So you can hear, so you can hear their like Sonic logo and it's like really loud. Yeah. Can you change the thing?
It's fully in. Mm-hmm. What this like chime it makes or the volume or
the chime it makes?
Yeah,
you can.
Yeah, mine just goes ding dong.
Oh, okay, cool. Yeah, so it comes like preloaded with their essentially what is like an audio logo, right?
Yeah,
and then so you just keep hearing their logo every time someone comes round, which is, you know, a little bit like, or not Orwellian, but it's like a little bit dystopian, right? I think, change it.
Mm.
Change it.
Yeah, mine's like the classic ding-dong.
Yeah, nothing wrong with a ding-dong.
Worth to live by.
Yeah, man. Because, like, there's brand recognition, right? Someone goes, bing-bong, you know that's a doorbell.
Mm.
Because that's a classic doorbell noise.
Yeah.
But in some ways, that's true, right?
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah?
Doorbell's not a brand, I guess.
No, it's not a brand, but it's one of those things where it's like being exposed over time.
Yeah.
And you just make that associations in seconds.
Yeah.
Don't you? Or less than that, just like straight away.
So we talk about these global brands with masses of global recognition, brand recognition. I guess, you know, certain names come to mind. And Nike don't even put any copy by their logo anymore, do they? It's just the swoosh is enough.
Yeah.
Yeah, certainly would be, yeah.
Well, just do it. They'll stick that
on. They use it here and yes. there, but you don't always see it on every campaign they do.
No.
So well known for yeah. their logo.
Yeah, but they can. You could even drop the logo, couldn't you, and just have the phrase, yeah. just do it.
Oh, yeah.
And people yeah. would know exactly that what's it's going Nike. On.
Yeah.
I wrote something once about like the pronunciation of Nike versus Nike and what it's is Nike, it supposed isn't to it? Be.
Yeah.
And it only occurred to me when I started sort of researching that is they never say it. You never hear it. The TV ads never say who they are.
Is no. it so? There's always that yeah. sort yeah. of theory going on there. Well, the I think, relevancy.
Yeah, I think in some ways, like, you shouldn't, like, you know, if you have to spell everything out, then there's no mystery. And what people like is being almost like part of a little mystery or something, right? So yeah. I think, yeah, yeah, you don't have to spell everything out all the time.
That's all well and good when you're a global super brand, though, isn't it? There's a lot of work to get there. I mean, yeah, if you're a sort of local business, then, you know, there's a temptation to look at your McDonald's and your Nikes and your Adidas, but you ain't that.
You've got
a different job to do.
But if you're trying to create, essentially you're trying to create interest and like intrigue, the way you would do that is by not revealing everything straight away and making a bit of a puzzle out of it. It's just hard enough so people feel pleased with themselves for solving it. Right, but it's not frustratingly like obscure. So I think you can still do that and kind of, you know, it's like a good like crime show or something. The whole point is you don't know who done it. And then, I mean, I know you've got Columbo where you know straight away, but then the joy is watching him, yeah, ensnare and like trap that person and like and all that sort of thing. So I think you can be mysterious as a small brand and still like build recognition. Because even something like really simple, so just say, just for example, whatever the brand is, right? If you just started putting posters or leaving flyers around that just had like, say, just like it was just like a white sheet, and then in the middle of it was like a red square, and then you just, even if you were just like in the local area, so you're like a small local service or store or something, then if you like put them all around, people can start thinking, what is this thing? Why do I keep seeing this red square everywhere? And then if you kind of like, when you're getting your store ready, you kind of put that red square, you know, or, you know, when they like wash the windows and all that, the whitewash while they're making the insides. If you start like adding red squares to it, people want to go like, that's the place where the red squares are. What is the red square? Right? I think that would work on some level.
Yeah.
No?
Yeah.
Do you think?
So I want to know what the red square is.
Yeah, you want to know what the red square's about now, intrigue. Don't you?
Creates intrigue.
There was a campaign a good few years ago now where there's loads of like posters and stuff appearing up with this sort of stylized question mark on it. And it turned out to be a Black Eyed Peas single.
Right.
Which is a bit sort of hard.
Yeah, but a bit disappointing, but...
But it was certainly effective. It's like gets people talking, gets a conversation going.
Yeah, and then if you do the red square thing, then that red square is yours, right? In a certain way, so you can then just use that wherever you want.
Post-reveal, you've still got something
to go recognisable.
Yeah.
So you can like do all the hard work up front, can't you? Brand, full-on brand strategies to go, that's a terrible idea. But in my little mind, I think that could be a winner.
There's compelling logic to it.
So I should try it?
Yeah, let's try it. Yeah. But not a red square, because now everyone will know it's just us and they'll be disappointed.
Is there such thing as too much of a good thing? Can there be too much brand recognition? Can you be too ubiquitous?
Yeah, I guess if everything's, you know, if you suddenly see everything or something everywhere all the time, you're going to get sick of it pretty quick.
Especially if like there's some kind of like kudos to be had from adopting something, and then suddenly it's everywhere. You lose that value to it.
Yeah,
I remember about like 20 years ago, there's that label Von Dutch, and suddenly everyone had like Von Dutch caps and t-shirts. You couldn't move for them, and like about a year later, it was done. It was gone, and never saw them again.
Yeah, I suppose, yeah, because like, that would be like a fad, right, yeah. Almost.
Yeah.
But I guess your early adopters then seeing...
Yeah.
Get sniffy about your later adopters.
Yeah.
Walking around in it and you're like, oh, no.
Yeah, I'm not wearing that anymore. Yeah.
In a way, it's not the brand's fault, though. Like,
no, and I've just been sick. Well, I guess... what's the checkered one that was really exclusive? Fans. No, the pattern and the clothes... The fashion
Burberry.
Yeah, so they were like a real high-end exclusive.
They still are, aren't they?
Yeah, I know, but there was a period, wasn't there? It was like early 2000s, I guess.
Oh.
Where it was just seen as being like really classless and chavvy. Like kind of chavvy stuff. Yeah.
Don't like the word, but that's,
like,
yeah.
Oh, yeah, like they'd wear the hat, the Burberry hats and stuff.
Yeah.
There's always been, I think, a fine line between sort of Sloane Square style and Essex style. There's always kind of almost goes hand in
I guess hand. It's people's prejudice, right? So yeah. It depends who's wearing it, doesn't it? Like, and you can't control who likes what you do. So you might see yourself as one thing, but if the people that like you aren't from a demographic that you aligned yourself with, then you either kind of denounce it or you embrace it.
I think Superdry felt a little bit of an effect from that. They sort of got Superdry.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
There started to be a few memes and stuff flying about Superdry and just a sort of general impression that perhaps it was a bit of a sort of over 30s dad trying to be cool.
Yeah, it is.
Kind of.
Is that what it is?
I walked here today in a Superdry jacket. I'd agree. You know, hands up. But
my stepdad wears it. Yeah. I think it's like a Superdry. Yeah, it definitely is.
Yeah.
Okay.
But they wouldn't have aimed for that, and they're stuck with that now, aren't they?
They would have probably gone for my generation.
Well, it just goes to show, doesn't it? Like that, Martin Neumeier said, "A brand, your brand, isn't what you say it is; it's what they say it is."
Yeah.
So you can do everything in your power to position yourself as a certain kind of brand, but if people go, actually, we think you're that kind of brand, then you are that kind of brand. Mm. It's really hard to reposition yourself from that.
I'm trying to think if anyone has sort of come back from it, changed the way a brand's been perceived. But yeah, it's turning around a tanker, isn't it?
Yeah, it's hard. Mm. I mean, I guess Burberry have a little bit, right? Because it's died down.
They're exclusive now, yeah. If you wear a Burberry, you've got money, you know.
Yeah.
But it's sort of almost taken a generation to
do that. Oh, yeah. It's taken a long time. I think music is what made it sort of bring back that classiness of it. Because rappers wear it, so it's expensive.
Oh, okay. So you've got
because they have money.
Right, yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah. And I guess like... Is it Ralph Lauren and all the polo stuff?
Oh, yeah, that's like quite laddie, I'd say.
Yeah, yeah. And I guess like Fred Perry, right? That was, I suppose, essentially sportswear, wasn't it? Originally, I guess.
I'd associate Fred Perry with like mods.
Oh, yeah, but Fred Perry was a tennis player.
Mm. Oh, was he?
Yeah.
Did you even know that?
So it would have been originally created as like sportswear, wouldn't it?
But then most recently it was adopted by an American far-right group, wasn't it?
Was it?
Really?
The Something Boys.
The Proud Boys?
The Idiot Boys. Proud Boys.
Yeah.
And, I think they turn up to their marches in the sort of the black polo with the yellow trim, which is really nice.
But now it's ruined it forever, right?
Gone forever.
Or certainly for a long time.
Yeah. It's gone the way of Cooper Bold or whatever.
Cooper Black.
Doesn't have to ruin it.
Huh?
Does it have to ruin it though?
No, I guess you can, you know, reclaim stuff, can't you? But having that confidence to go, well,
yeah, to rock
I'm just going to deal with the potentially people thinking
hating me,
a Nazi,
especially as a white man.
Yeah, I guess that is true. Yeah.
Oh, I guess we'll probably end it on that slightly sad note. But yeah, if you do have any thoughts or experiences you want to share with us, or questions you want to ask us, or mistakes that we've made that you want to point out, just get in touch with us via the Solar Press YouTube channel, your preferred streaming platform, or our social media channels. Your feedback's really valuable. We love to hear it. And if you like and subscribe, it helps us out. And if you leave a comment or a question, we'll have a go at addressing it. This has been a Solar Press podcast brought to you by Poppy Productions. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you again soon. Thank you.